Welcome to Immunology Insights. I'm Dr. Victor Roberts, your moderator for today's roundtable discussion on the fascinating world of immunology. Today, we're diving deep into the immune system, which I like to think of as a multi-layered logic circuit. It's not just about fighting off infections. It's about sensing, processing, and responding to biological threats in a way that keeps us healthy.
Absolutely, Victor. The immune system is our body's operating system for health surveillance. It's constantly monitoring for pathogens and managing our immune memory so we can respond more effectively to future encounters. This is crucial not just for our survival, but for understanding various diseases and how we can treat them.
And let's not forget, immunology is also about the stories behind those responses. Each immune cell has its own role, and they interact in such intricate ways. It's like a detective novel where the characters, our immune cells, are always on the lookout for clues about what's threatening the body.
Exactly. Throughout this episode, we'll explore the key players in the immune system, how they activate and coordinate their responses, and what happens when things go awry. We'll also touch on diagnostic tools and therapeutic implications, making sure to connect the dots to clinical relevance. So, let's get started.
All right, let's dive into the cast of defenders that make up our immune system. At the forefront, we have the innate immune cells, which act as our first line of defense against pathogens. These include macrophages, neutrophils, and dendritic cells. Each of these cells has a unique role in identifying and responding to invaders. For instance, macrophages are like the body's cleanup crew, engulfing pathogens and debris, while neutrophils are the rapid responders that rush to the site of infection.
And let's not forget about the adaptive immune cells. This is where things get really interesting. B cells and T cells are the stars of the adaptive immune response. B cells are responsible for producing antibodies, which are like specialized missiles targeting specific pathogens. T cells, on the other hand, come in different varieties. Helper T cells coordinate the immune response, while cytotoxic T cells directly kill infected cells. It's like a well-orchestrated military operation.
Exactly, Caitlin. And these cells don't operate in isolation. They rely on a variety of signaling molecules to communicate and coordinate their actions. Cytokines, for example, are crucial for cell signaling in the immune response. They can enhance or inhibit the activity of immune cells, effectively directing the immune response.
Right. And we also have complement proteins, which are part of the innate immune system. They work in tandem with antibodies to mark pathogens for destruction and help recruit other immune cells to the site of infection. It's like a tag team effort.
And let's not overlook the organs and tissues that support these immune cells. The bone marrow is where all blood cells, including our immune cells, are produced. The thymus is where T cells mature, and lymph nodes act as the meeting points where immune cells can gather and strategize against pathogens. It's a whole ecosystem working together.
So, to summarize, we have a diverse array of cells, signaling molecules, and organs all playing vital roles in our immune defense. Understanding these components is crucial for grasping how our body protects itself and how we can intervene in cases of dysfunction or disease.
Now that we've introduced the key players, let's talk about how the immune system actually gets activated. It all starts with the recognition of pathogens, which can be broadly categorized into two groups: PAMPs, or pathogen-associated molecular patterns, and DAMPs, or damage-associated molecular patterns. PAMPs are molecules found on pathogens, while DAMPs are released by damaged or dying cells. This distinction is crucial for the immune system to differentiate between self and non-self.
Exactly, Caitlin. The immune system uses pattern recognition receptors, or PRRs, to detect these PAMPs and DAMPs. Toll-like receptors, or TLRs, are one of the most well-studied classes of PRRs. When a TLR recognizes a PAMP, it triggers a cascade of signaling pathways that lead to the activation of immune responses. It's like pulling a fire alarm when there's smoke in the building.
And once those signals are activated, we see a whole range of responses. For example, the activated immune cells can start producing cytokines, which are signaling molecules that help coordinate the immune response. This can lead to inflammation, which is a critical part of the immune response, helping to isolate and eliminate pathogens.
Right. And then there's the process of antigen presentation. Dendritic cells, for instance, play a pivotal role here. After ingesting a pathogen, they process it and present its antigens on their surface using major histocompatibility complex, MHC molecules. This is like showing a wanted poster to T cells, which then become activated to hunt down the invaders.
And this activation of T cells is crucial for a robust immune response. Once activated, T cells can proliferate and differentiate into effector cells that actively fight the infection. Some will become memory T cells, ensuring that the body can respond more quickly if the same pathogen is encountered again in the future. This memory aspect is what vaccines aim to harness.
So, to sum it up, the activation of the immune system is a multi-step process involving recognition of pathogens, signaling through PRRs, and subsequent activation of immune cells. Understanding these mechanisms not only helps us appreciate how our body defends itself, but also informs how we can develop therapies to enhance or modulate these responses in clinical settings.
Now that we've discussed how the immune system is activated, let's delve into the coordination and regulation of immune responses. It's crucial that the immune system not only responds effectively, but also maintains balance to prevent overreaction or damage to the body itself. This is where communication between immune cells becomes essential.
Absolutely, Victor. Immune cells communicate through a variety of signaling molecules, primarily cytokines and chemokines. Cytokines are like the immune system's text messages, sending signals that can either promote or inhibit immune responses. For instance, interleukins can stimulate B and T cell proliferation, while other cytokines can dampen the response to prevent excessive inflammation.
And chemokines play a key role in directing the movement of immune cells to sites of infection or injury. Think of them as GPS coordinates, guiding immune cells to where they're needed most. This precise coordination is vital for an effective response.
Moreover, we have regulatory T cells, or TREGs, which are critical for maintaining immune tolerance. They help to suppress excessive immune responses and prevent autoimmunity. Without these regulatory mechanisms, our immune system could mistakenly attack our own tissues, leading to autoimmune diseases.
Exactly. And there are also immune checkpoints, such as CTLA-4 and PD-1, which are like brakes on the immune response. They ensure that once the threat is eliminated, the immune system can downregulate its activity, preventing unnecessary damage to healthy tissues.
It's fascinating how this balance is maintained. There are feedback loops that allow the immune system to adjust its responses based on the current state of the body. For example, if a pathogen is cleared, the signals that promote inflammation will decrease, allowing the immune system to return to a resting state.
So, in summary, the coordination and regulation of immune responses are essential for effective immunity. This intricate communication network ensures that the immune system can respond appropriately to threats while avoiding collateral damage. Understanding these dynamics is crucial for developing therapies that can enhance or modulate immune responses in various diseases.
Now let's explore the patterns of immune dysfunction that can occur when our immune system goes awry. There are generally three main categories of dysfunction: immunodeficiency, hypersensitivity, and autoimmunity. Each of these represents a different way the immune system can misbehave.
Right, Caitlin. Starting with immunodeficiency, this occurs when the immune system is underactive or unable to respond effectively to pathogens. A classic example is severe combined immunodeficiency, or SCIBD, where individuals lack functional T and B cells. This leaves them highly susceptible to infections that a healthy immune system would easily handle.
On the other end of the spectrum, we have hypersensitivity, which is an overreaction of the immune system to harmless substances. Allergies are a common example where the immune system mistakenly identifies a benign substance, like pollen or certain foods, as a threat. This can lead to symptoms ranging from mild reactions, like sneezing, to severe anaphylaxis, which can be life-threatening.
And then there's autoimmunity, where the immune system mistakenly attacks the body's own tissues. Conditions like lupus and rheumatoid arthritis are prime examples of this dysfunction. In these cases, the immune system fails to recognize self from non-self, leading to chronic inflammation and damage to healthy tissues.
It's fascinating, yet concerning, how the immune system can misinterpret signals. The balance between activation and regulation is delicate, and when disrupted, it can lead to significant health issues. Understanding these patterns is crucial for developing targeted therapies and interventions.
Indeed, and recognizing these dysfunctions early can lead to better management strategies. For example, immunodeficiency may require immunoglobulin replacement therapy, while autoimmune conditions might be managed with immunosuppressive medications to reduce the overactive immune response.
So, to wrap up this segment, we've highlighted the three main patterns of immune dysfunction: immunodeficiency, hypersensitivity, and autoimmunity. Each of these represents a unique challenge in immunology and underscores the importance of a well-functioning immune system for overall health.
In this segment, we're going to discuss the diagnostic tools used in immunology to assess immune function. Understanding how we evaluate the immune system is crucial for diagnosing various conditions and guiding treatment. One of the foundational tests is the complete blood count, or CBC, with differential. This test provides information about the different types of cells in the blood, including white blood cells, which are key players in the immune response.
Exactly, Olivia. A CBC can help identify abnormalities in white blood cell counts, which can indicate infections, autoimmune disorders, or even malignancies. For instance, an elevated white blood cell count might suggest an ongoing infection, while a low count could indicate immunodeficiency.
And let's not forget about immunoglobulin panels. These tests measure the levels of different antibodies in the blood, helping us assess how well the immune system is functioning. For example, low levels of immunoglobulin can indicate a specific type of immunodeficiency, while high levels might suggest an autoimmune condition or chronic infection.
Flow cytometry is another powerful tool we use in immunology. It allows us to analyze the physical and chemical characteristics of immune cells. By labeling cells with fluorescent antibodies, we can quantify different cell populations and assess their activation status. This is particularly useful in diagnosing conditions like leukemia or lymphoma.
Absolutely. And we also have tests like the antinuclear antibody test, or ANA, which is commonly used to screen for autoimmune diseases. A positive ANA test can indicate conditions like lupus or rheumatoid arthritis, but it's important to interpret these results in conjunction with clinical findings, as many healthy individuals can also test positive.
And let's not overlook inflammation markers like C-reactive protein, CRP, and erythrocyte sedimentation rate, ESR. These tests help us gauge the level of inflammation in the body, which can be a sign of various immune-related conditions. They're not specific, but they provide valuable context in the diagnostic process.
In summary, these diagnostic tools, CBC, immunoglobulin panels, flow cytometry, ANA testing, and inflammation markers, are essential for assessing immune function. They help us understand the underlying causes of immune dysfunction and guide our clinical decisions. It's fascinating how these tests can provide such a comprehensive picture of the immune system's health.
In this segment, we'll explore the therapeutic implications of immunology. Understanding how we can manipulate the immune system opens up a wide array of treatment options for various diseases. Let's start with vaccines, which are perhaps the most well-known immunological interventions. Vaccines work by training the immune system to recognize and combat pathogens without causing the disease itself. This is a cornerstone of public health.
Absolutely, Victor. Vaccines stimulate the adaptive immune response, leading to the production of memory cells. This means that when the body encounters the actual pathogen in the future, it can mount a rapid and effective response. We've seen tremendous success with vaccines for diseases like measles, mumps, and more recently, COVID-19.
And beyond vaccines, we have monoclonal antibodies, which are engineered to target specific antigens on pathogens or diseased cells. This targeted approach can be incredibly effective in treating conditions like cancer, where monoclonal antibodies can mark cancer cells for destruction or block signals that promote tumor growth. It's like sending in a specialized SWAT team to handle a specific threat.
That's a great analogy, Caitlin. Additionally, checkpoint inhibitors have revolutionized cancer therapy by unleashing the immune system's ability to attack tumors. By blocking proteins like PD-1 or CTLA-4, these therapies enhance T-cell responses against cancer cells, allowing the immune system to recognize and destroy them more effectively.
And we can't forget about immunosuppressants, which are crucial for managing autoimmune diseases and preventing transplant rejection. These drugs help to dampen an overactive immune response, allowing patients to maintain health without the immune system attacking their own tissues. However, it's a delicate balance, as we don't want to suppress the immune system too much.
Exactly. It's all about finding that sweet spot. There are also emerging therapies like CAR T-cell therapy, where a patient's T-cells are genetically modified to better fight cancer. This personalized approach holds great promise for treating certain types of blood cancers.
In summary, the therapeutic implications of immunology are vast and varied, ranging from vaccines and monoclonal antibodies to checkpoint inhibitors and immunosuppressants. Each of these strategies leverages our understanding of the immune system to enhance health and combat disease. It's an exciting time in the field of immunology. As we wrap up today's episode, let's take a moment to reflect on the key insights we've discussed regarding the immune system. We started by framing the immune system as a complex logic circuit capable of sensing and responding to biological threats. This foundational understanding is crucial for appreciating the intricate workings of immunity.
Absolutely, Victor. We explored the various components of the immune system, from the innate and adaptive cells to the signaling molecules that facilitate communication. Each player has a unique role, and together they form a robust defense against pathogens.
And we delved into how immune activation occurs, highlighting the importance of antigen recognition and the mechanisms that trigger immune responses. It's fascinating how our bodies can distinguish between self and non-self, and how this recognition is the first step in mounting an effective defense.
We also discussed the coordination and regulation of immune responses, emphasizing the delicate balance that must be maintained to prevent overreaction or autoimmunity. This is where the immune system's feedback mechanisms and regulatory cells come into play, ensuring that we respond appropriately to threats without damaging our own tissues.
Then we examined the patterns of immune dysfunction, including immunodeficiency, hypersensitivity, and autoimmunity. Understanding these dysfunctions helps us appreciate the challenges faced in clinical settings and the importance of timely diagnosis and intervention.
We also covered the diagnostic tools that help us assess immune function, such as CBCs, immunoglobulin panels, and flow cytometry. These tests are vital for guiding clinical decisions and developing personalized treatment plans.
Finally, we highlighted the therapeutic implications of immunology, from vaccines and monoclonal antibodies to immunosuppressants and CAR T-cell therapy. Each of these strategies leverages our understanding of the immune system to enhance health and combat disease.
As we conclude, I'd like to leave our listeners with the thought that immunology isn't just a branch of biology. It's an essential part of medicine that informs how we understand health and disease.
And remember, there's always more to learn. The landscape of immunology is constantly evolving, and staying informed is key to leveraging these insights in clinical practice.